Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday, folks. It's Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio, and how are you? I think I mentioned, or maybe I didn't, I don't know, last week, but I was informed by the producers that our cumulative listenership for last week went over 2 million. Wow. Thank you all. And I got a bunch of emails, letters, posts, you name it, on last week's show saying it was great. Etc., etc., etc. Several from new listeners, by the way, including one gal who said, "Listen to your show. Wow, it was great. I'm a listener from here on in," etc., etc. I'm paraphrasing. So I appreciate those comments. I appreciate you going to Facebook and throwing likes at the On the Right Side Radio Facebook page. And whatever you want to do to show support, give me your opinions, make your comments, etc. Including, by the way, you lefties who love to listen to me because it drives you crazy and you don't like me much. That's cool, too. Anyway, we have a bunch of stuff to cover today. A bunch of stuff. So I'm going to get started here pretty quick. But just to give you an idea what we have on the show, we're going to talk a little bit about gun control, some stuff you don't know. We're going to talk just a little bit about the Virginia and New Jersey elections, which everybody, you know, the Democrats are the progressives. There are no Democrats. Which the progressives are jumping up and down saying, you know, renunciation of Trump. And the Republicans are wringing their hands saying, oh my God, it's the end. None of which is true. We're going to talk very briefly about the tax bill, which passed the House and is now in the clutches, and I don't use that term advisedly, the clutches of the, you know, pathetic United States Senate. We're going to talk very briefly about Trump's Asia trip because, you know, the media doesn't want to talk about that too much except for some outlets. We're going to talk a little bit about Uranium One. And no, I'm not going to rehash all. I've given you extensive coverage of Uranium One, more than probably anybody other than Hannity, and in some cases, some things he didn't bring up. Just put Uranium One into the search bar on the onthe rightsideradio.com site, and you can listen to all the shows, including, by the way, since I was like about the first in media to bring this up, more than a year and a half or 2 years, whatever it was ago. I'm talking about a long time ago. And now the chickens are coming home to roost. I kind of love it. But we're going to talk about some things you don't know about that and some more tidbits that have come out this week that are not being covered, which, by the way, are highly adverse to Clinton, Obama, and that whole cabal of crooks and corrupt, treasonous folks. And then I'm going to give you my little take on what's really going on with Mueller and Trump, which I think you'll find very interesting. And you'll have to get yourself in the mindset. You'll have to get yourself in the mindset of Trump being really smart, really savvy, a tough street fighter to fully understand where I'm going to go with my little hypothesis. And we're going to talk a little bit about, by the way, why Hillary's getting thrown under the bus, Hillary and Bill all of a sudden, in, yes, the salacious sex fuzz that I talked about on last week's show. The salacious sex fuzz. You know, I mean, unbelievable, right? How many stories have come out just this week? I mean, there's Hollywood guys, and there's politician guys, and there's Al Frankenstein, as Trump calls him. I cracked up over that tweet. That was great. Al Frankenstein. But where did his hands go in the next five pictures? You know, it is so refreshing to have a president of the United States who just kind of lays it out there many times in humor that the left absolutely doesn't get or doesn't understand, but which cracks me up. It cracks me up because I understand the humor. And anyway, and we're going to talk about, yes, Las Vegas. I'm not letting go of that story. I've never let go of Benghazi, and I probably never will until the truth comes out. One day it will. And I've never let go of Las Vegas. 6 weeks later, and we don't know nothing, and there's like a news blackout, there's an investigation blackout, there's a press conference blackout. I mean, it's, my antenna are like extended full length with red flags flapping off their buzzing little ends. I don't know about you, but certainly for me. And I'm going to tie that in for you a little bit more. You know, last week I went over this hypothesis about Saudi Arabia. You should really listen to last week's show if you didn't, because it'll give you foundation for this week's show. And I'm going to expound on that a little bit this week. I'm going to let you know all the things that we don't know, which are legions, about Las Vegas in this sudden blackout that's descended over, you know, this horrific event where 500 plus people were injured, maimed, and wounded, and 58 killed. What we don't know is much more interesting now than we know, and why we don't know it might be the most interesting thing of all, and that has to go right back to, again, Saudi Arabia, and the ties, the inextricable ties of Saudi Arabia to America's deep state. I'll explain to you as we get into the show. And then we're going to talk about, and nobody's talking about it, if you look under the articles posted on ontherightsideradio.com, you will see under family safety a number of articles I have posted on the bubonic plague, which has now, unfortunately, risen its ugly head in a tremendous outbreak. In fact, a local pandemic in several areas in Africa. And it seems to be a strain that they don't have a cure / antibiotic / whatever for. And there's genuine concern about this becoming a global pandemic. There are doctors who have been interviewed who say that death occurs within 3 hours. Now, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a medical guy. I can't tell you if that's true. I'm just going to report to you a lot of information from a lot of different sources, and I'm going to give you a hypothesis on that, too. And you'll find it, I think, a little scary, and it'll make you think. And then I have long promised, and the never-ending deluge, the barrage, the cascade, the waterfall of news on many different fronts has pushed it back and back and back and back, kind of like that long-promised segment that I finally got to you on which states were broke and which states weren't and why, which, by the way, ties into the tax stuff I'm going to talk about today. And so I'm going to give you a little comparison, a little description of and comparison of AARP and AMAC, the two major organizations that represent seniors and through which you can get Medicare gap insurance and et cetera. And, you know, some of you, I call it younger listeners, you know, under 50, and I have many, 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 many of you. In fact, more and more millennials, which is terrific. You may think that doesn't apply to you, but it does apply to you, because there is a political overtone to AARP and AMAC, number one. Number two, AARP is like the largest single lobbyist in Washington, D.C., with a lobbying budget of $28 million. And number three, because believe it or not, one day you're going to have to look at this stuff. And the whole industry, retirement, Social Security, Medicare, is in flux, folks. It's in flux for many different reasons, not the least of which is it's all going broke. And I've talked about that on many shows also. In any event, I'm going to try and cover all this stuff today. And I don't know if I'm going to get it done or not. You know, I've gotten lots of comments about, wow, you know, since your show expanded to an hour and a half, it's really great, but you still don't get it all covered. I know. I know I don't. I'm not sure you could expand this show to 8 hours and cover everything that's going on. You know, in that respect, the other folks, Levin and Hannity and Limbaugh, et cetera, all of whom are terrific, you know, they have a decided advantage. They're like on air for anywhere from 1 to 3 hours every day. In some cases, like Sean, he's on air for 3 hours a day radio, and then he's on air for an hour a day TV. I mean, these folks are covering, well, some of the stuff, a lot of the stuff, in fact, that I cover, they don't cover. However, the major stories, which we all cover, they have 20 hours a week or whatever it comes out to cover it, and I got an hour and a half. It's a decided disadvantage. I'll have to see what I can do about that in the future. But right now, we're in the current. So, I'm going to start you off with a continuation, not a story, but a continuation of a story. And that was last week's story. If you remember, I took a real current situation, applied a fictional location with fictional numbers. I, you know, didn't mention any names to protect the innocent. And I told you about our government with a cash offer for a property they are trying to sell that lost us $100,000+ in U.S. taxpayer money to begin with and is losing us $1,000 a month in U.S. taxpayer money every month they hold it. They had a cash offer for X. And rather than respond to the cash offer, they lowered the price of the property to X minus $10,000 and left the contract sitting out there with no response. They say, well, we don't like the additional provisions. That, by the way, was like after they lowered the price of the property, $10,000 of our taxpayer money. That's you and me, folks. Multiply by a million properties just like it, by a number of federal agencies that are just as competent. Incompetent, excuse me. That was definitely not a Freudian slip. So, as a continuation of that story, my client resubmitted their offer at the new lowered price, that is, the price that this agency, Fannie Mae, lowered the price to, even though they had an offer for $10,000 more cash that they had not responded to. Well, now it seems that at this new lower price, everybody has figured out that the United States taxpayer is losing their butt because of the incompetent management of our assets. So now there's four contracts in on this property. My client has declined to change their offer. I mean, I don't want to get you in the weeds here. But the bottom line is, when we inquired as to what was going on with the offer, which is still cash, write a check, no financing, no nothing, which I would doubt, I don't know, that any of the other offers are, we were told by this fiduciary of our tax money, this agency, that, they're going to look at the highest and best offer. Let me throw in something else that we learned in over the last 2 weeks. We learned that this home, which is a modular, this property is a modular property, has been moved twice. And it appears that there are many, many, many lenders out there who A, won't loan on modulars, and B, none so far that we have found that would loan on a modular that's been moved twice. So the bottom line is, there is no such thing as a highest and best offer, because anybody who's submitting an offer where they have to get a mortgage loan to buy the property, probably, like 99%, can't get the loan because it will not meet any lender's underwriting criteria, which means that the only offer they could take is a cash offer, which so far, over the course of 4 weeks, including a cash offer that went in and then they lowered the price without responding, they still can't seem to get accepted. That, folks, is your tax money at work, and I can't make this story up. It's unbelievable. I will keep you posted. Although next week I think I'll have a more of a story for you. I'm already kind of working on that. Just a little teaser. Now, let's start with the show, because, I mean, we got a bunch of stuff here. Are you ready? Are you ready? I'm ready. First of all, gun control. Look, all you gun owners, you supporters of the Second Amendment who listen to me, and I'm an adamant supporter of the Second Amendment for a whole bunch of reasons, which I won't go into right now. Some of which have to do with self-defense against others, but most of which have to do with defense of the Constitution against the government. The Second Amendment, folks, is really under scurrilous attack. Now, if you are keeping your ears to the track of what the mainstream anti-gun media and the anti-gun nuts are saying, you can see that they are going perilously close, in some cases right there, at gun confiscation. Now, remember that progressives, and I've said this a million times on a million shows, they play long ball. Do you remember, and I keep referring to him, Cass Sunstein, the regulatory czar for Obama? He wrote this book, and he talked about nudge. In other words, you nudge your ideology forward one little bit at a time until suddenly, you know, the enemy is ensnared in it and can't get out. Kind of like Obamacare. You know what I mean? Perfect example. Well, you will see that the left and the anti-gun crowd is now starting to talk about gun confiscation. Several of them have said, oh, well, we should adopt this really fair system that Australia has, you know, where you can turn in your guns and get paid for them. Beep. Wrong. New contestant. Australia's law, which is outrageous, was you had to turn in your guns or face prison time, and the government would pay you for the gun, i.e. the confiscation of the gun, which is what it really was, whatever they deemed to be fair for the firearm. So Australia was disarmed, literally forcibly. So when they talk about Australia and getting paid to turn in your guns and make it sound voluntary, absolutely false. Number two, you'll see that many of them, and there's been a bill introduced in the House or the Senate, I'm sorry, I don't know which, the point is the same, that says, you know, gun confiscation should be made legal if a gun owner is complained about, I'm paraphrasing, if a gun owner is complained about by anyone for any mental health, unstable, unusual, once again, I'm paraphrasing. The bottom line is, if you are a gun owner and you have a fight with your boyfriend or your girlfriend or your husband or your wife or your kids get pissed at you or, you know, the sun doesn't shine exactly as the neighbor thinks it should, under this bill, literally, they could report you as unstable, angry, you know, mentally retarded. I mean, Rand Paul's neighbor, who tackled Rand Paul and broke six of his ribs, the ultra-lefty that Rand Paul, who is not a righty but a libertarian, which is still the opposite of an ultra-lefty, maybe the exact opposite, right? Libertarian, no government, ultra-lefty, big government, who was tackled by this guy. This guy could have called, under this new bill, could have made a complaint about Rand Paul being unstable because of his beliefs, and basically, without due process, without warrant, without anything, the local police and or the state police or the feds, I mean, the bill is kind of unclear, but basically any law enforcement agency would have this right, can arrive at your front door, kick it in, take your guns, and that's it. This is based on an unsubstantiated complaint. Now, understand this is in the context of a society where literally, other than Stephen Paddock, but that's a whole different case. Other than Stephen Paddock in Las Vegas, every major shooter, most of them Islamist, and all of them except one, ultra-left, in some cases, that unholy alliance I always talk about of ultra-left and Islamist, they've been interviewed by the FBI. They've been on watch lists. They've been reported to be unstable. I mean, truly unstable. Like, insane. Like, this guy who did the Texas shooting was in an insane asylum and escaped. Was discharged from the Air Force. Dishonorably discharged from the Air Force. Spent a year in the brig for domestic violence. Now, that seems to have a little substance. And then was able to go out and buy a gun anyway because the government itself, its systems broke down under Obama's latent policies regarding privacy and bad stuff that happens in the military. Well, keep your eyes on this legislation, folks, because anytime somebody who doesn't like you, and remember, most of you who listen to this show are in red states. Not all. Many of you, a good number of you are conservatives, or at least moderates, who listen in blue states and around the world. I mean, I get letters anymore from Europe and all sorts of places. But the bottom line is that you never allow somebody who does not think like you, who is opposed to your viewpoint, and who regards you as a mound of feces, which is what these people think of us, you never let them decide subjectively what you may or may not think and what is right or wrong, particularly when it comes to your rights, and particularly when it comes to your Second Amendment rights. To give you an idea, Colorado, which is, if not blue, deeply purple, with the influx of Californians, New York, etc., into the Front Range, the Denver area, and notwithstanding the fact that the West Slope has remained conservative. There is, a week ago, there is an off-duty Denver policeman. You guys can Google this up if you want. Don't Google it up, Yahoo it up. You've heard me talk about Google. There's an off-duty Denver police officer. He's sleeping in the basement. He hears, this is like 2 in the morning, somebody walking around or creeping around upstairs. He goes up with his gun, with his service revolver, and here is this intruder. They're fuzzy on what happens next, but the bottom line is he shoots the intruder and kills him. I want you to know that the DA in that Denver suburb is actually seeing if this police officer should be indicted for shooting. Okay, I'm done with this. I'm tired of this of these phones and all sorts of things ringing while I am talking when I think they're off. And by God, it's off now because I just threw it on the ground and hit it with a hammer. I'm kind of like Hillary Clinton. I just hammered my cell phone. What else? What other evidence can I destroy? Oh, I wish I was kidding, but I'm not. Anyway, this poor police officer, an intruder in his house in the dark at 2 in the morning, and he shoots him, and now he may be indicted because the DA, who's a progressive, isn't really sure that it comes under the Colorado Make My Day law. Because the intruder, it turns out, may have been mentally incapacitated. Oh, please. You know, I don't care if somebody comes in, breaks in my house at 2 in the morning. I mean, I don't care what color they are. I don't care what religion they are. I don't care where they came from, whether it's Afghanistan, downtown Denver, or Mars. And I don't care if they're sane or not. They're going to have a really bad night. I mean, really. So I'm just telling you, folks, I'm using that as an example of what is going on kind of behind the scenes, underneath the radar, with gun control and gun confiscation, because this is not a dead subject. Just because you hear the Democrats scream and jump and yell and go up and down and then it goes quiet and you think, okay, another temper tantrum, and we're past it. That is not true. And if you go to gun control, that section of articles on the website, on the rightsideradio.com for this show that the producers have posted, you should read those articles. I think it'll bring you up to date. It's something we have to be really alert to. Now, let's talk about the Virginia elections. I got a lot of segments in this show. The Virginia elections. Okay, well, you know, the Republicans are going, oh, my God, it's the end. And the Democrats, I'm being kind, the progressives are jumping up and down saying it's the beginning. Folks, let me put this in context for you. Virginia is a blue state. It is not a red state anymore. It hasn't been a red state for a long, long, long time. And the reason is that Northern Virginia is all the swamp creatures who are 99% progressives that work in Washington, D.C. Virginia's north and that huge population, which now controls the state vote because the other 80% of the state is red-red, is kind of like Denver controlling the vote of Colorado. It's an analogous to it. And by the way, it is also another indication of the dastardly and unfortunately so far successful plan of progressives and the ultra-left to turn red states blue. And that has to do with illegal immigration, demographic shifting, all sorts of things. We don't have time to go into that. I'm going to do a show on that in the future, how the Dems are trying to turn red states blue. Texas, by the way, being their number one target. Another story for another day. Anyway, the Virginia vote and the New Jersey vote was A, expected, B, in blue states, C, doesn't mean squat. It only means two things. Number one, it is an early warning wake-up call for Republicans that they cannot be milquetoast Republicans. They cannot be establishment Republicans. They cannot be rhino Republicans. Ed Gillespie, the Republican candidate for governor, who, by the way, is a fairly decent guy and a fairly decent politician with fairly decent policies, he just couldn't get on the bandwagon to support Trump and unequivocally support Trump's policies. He really thought that he would get some of that blue vote from the swamp critters. He was wrong. In fact, if you want to track the polls, just to make my point, in that race. Gillespie started way down, closed the gap really marginally, like 4 or 5 months out from the election. And then, only in the last month, too little, too late, when he started to talk about Trump, and Trump was great, and Trump was it, only then did his poll numbers jump. Only then. There's a lesson in that. So, the message to Republicans is, get on board or get off the train, or the train will run you over. And as far as the Democrats thinking that this is the turning point for them, they're back. They're going to retake these 1,200 seats they lost under ultra-left Islamist sympathizing Barack Obama and his cabal and corrupt Hillary. Keep thinking that way. I love it. You guys just keep thinking that you got the formula now. And apply that elsewhere where you don't have a state with the composition, the demographic composition of a Colorado or a Virginia. Good luck with that. Let's talk about tax real quick. Okay. So this tax bill now finally is shaping up. I told you I wasn't going to talk about it until it at least was in the form of unshaped clay. Because prior to this, it was in the form of like ephemeral mist. Now it's been passed by the House, and there's variations of it floating around the Senate, and everybody's jumping up and down, yelling and screaming. I would say it's in the shape of unformed clay. I'm going to get into, in a moment, the salacious sex fuzz, Roy Moore, and some other things, because it's all tied in, okay? And it's all politically motivated, and it's all part of a much bigger plan. And my job is to bring you what's behind the surface of the news. And those of you who have been listening to me for a long time, even those of you who have been listening to me for one or two shows, that's what I do. I bring you the news underneath the surface. The real reasons why news is happening. The real agenda behind what you see as isolated news bits, because they're all connected. So, you will note that in the House, there were a number of Republicans who voted against the bill. I think it was 12 or 13. Doesn't really matter, whatever the number was. And in the Senate, you can see that there's a number of Republicans who are beating their chests about how they're not going to support it, or they have concerns, or whatever their rhetoric is, or political rhetoric. Ron Johnson is one, and course, you know, McCain's really a Democrat anyway. Who knows? But if you will note, virtually all the Republicans who voted against it or who are now expressing concerns about it are Republicans from those seven blue states. And I talked about this, I believe, either last show or the show before. Just put in tax or blue state or property tax, state income tax, and those shows will come up. Because it is, first of all, it's not their constituents, right? If you are a congressman, a Republican congressman from Illinois, or New York, or particularly California, the chances are that the rich progressives who write off 100% of their outrageous state property taxes and their outrageous state income taxes in these horribly governed, fiscally unsound, financially unstable, welfare-giving, illegal immigrant-loving states are not your constituents. And the beauty of this tax bill, in my mind, is that finally, those ultra-leftists who have been riding on your dollar and my dollar, the rich in California who write off and save federal income tax because of their $100,000 property bills and their $50,000 or $60,000 state income tax bills. That money that does not go to the United States Treasury, folks, is being paid by us, the people in Colorado and Wyoming and Kentucky and Missouri and all the places that you folks listen to me. We've been paying their freight. And you know what? I'm tired of it. They can pay their own damn freight. And I find it almost nonsensical that these Republicans are protesting that, you know, this isn't fair. No. What is right now the status quo is not fair. I think what is fair, I think the Senate has $1 million limit on value and mortgage and deductions and all that kind of stuff. And I think that the House has $500,000, or maybe it's vice versa. It doesn't matter. The point of fact is that there's damn few Americans who have a property that's worth more than $500,000 as their primary residence. There's even less that have a mortgage of $500,000 or more. So it's all those people who own properties or have mortgages less than $500,000 that will benefit by this tax bill, which is a hell of a lot more people than will be hurt. But the folks which are quote unquote hurt are not hurt. They're just now paying their fair share. Remember Barack, baby? Barack, Barry, our buddy Barry, that American loving Islamist hating middle of the road guy, Barry. Yeah, our friend. Do you remember how many times he said everybody needs to pay their fair share? Well, here we are. Time to pay your fair share. Now, there's been a lot of talk, and you know, the Democrats are very good at stealing the stage and getting a message out, and the Republicans suck at it. They are just terrible. So early on, the Democrats poisoned the tax bill well by getting out this notion that only the wealthy were benefiting and blah, 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 blah. It's simply not true. In fact, there's many places that the wealthy and the ultra wealthy get socked in this tax bill. Since most, not all, most of the wealthy and ultra wealthy live in those seven blue states, yeah, they don't get to write off those property taxes and those incomes and those state income taxes that you and I have been paying for. And a lot of their mortgage interest deductions over, depending upon which bill you look at, House or Senate, over $500,000 or over $1 million mortgage, blah, 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 they go away. Now, last week I told you on this tax bill, or the last week or the week before, just the state and property, just the state income tax and property tax change in this tax bill generates $1.3 trillion, let me underline that, $1.3 trillion more revenue to the federal government. Just that provision. And it sure in hell does not come out of the pocket of Bubba, who has a $400,000 maybe house with, hopefully, a $100,000 or $200,000 mortgage. Or even a $390,000 mortgage. Doesn't affect you at all. And whatever the Democrats are saying is a lie. And it is also true that this tax bill, while it takes away certain deductions, for instance, you don't get to write off the interest on your student loan, or you don't get to write off some of your health expenses, more than compensates for that with a bunch of other credits and tax savings devices, including an increase in how much you get an automatic, I'll call it deduction for every kid. How much your it almost doubles your deduction for a family. You know, you're off the top. If you made $50,000, you got a family of four. There's now going to be a $24,000, depending upon which bill you look at, a $24,000 off the top. So your taxable income is $26,000. Under the old bill, your taxable income would have been somewhere between $36,000 and $40,000. And I can go on down the list, but it's pointless because, once again, we've gone from ephemeral mist to shapeless piece of clay. And until that clay has better shape, I can't really get into it, and I'd be wasting your time with the details. These are some of the major points, which in one way, shape, or form are going to be part of that final clay model that's going to be a bill, which is either going to be passed or not, which may be contingent upon the Alabama election. Which, by the way, brings me to the next segment. Salacious sex fuzz. Boy, did I have that kind of right on? Talked about that the last 2 weeks. I said it's just going to get more and more and more and louder and louder and louder. And yada, yada, yada. And, you know, there's going to be politicians and there's going to be people in Hollywood and there's going to be all sorts of people. And here we are. I mean, one after the other is like two or three a day, new ones, right? And once again, folks, it's politically motivated and it's designed to cover up other news, such as some of the news I just covered with you and some of the news I'm going to be covering with you after this short segment. It also has an ulterior motive. This salacious sex fuzz is also being used by the left to try and undermine conservative media. You're scratching your head going, what are you talking about? Let me give you an example. So there was a bunch of tweets after Sean Hannity did his interview with Judge Roy Moore, which I've watched twice now, and I thought Sean was direct, hard-hitting. And in fact, some of the tougher questions he asked on three occasions. Yet, no matter what he did, based on his statement that, you know, in the United States, you're innocent until proven guilty, and, you know, the facts are the facts, and et cetera, et cetera. There's been a bunch of people tweeting, including one Angelo Carusone, Carusone. I'll let you know a little bit about him in a moment, because he likes to come off as, you know, his Twitter is at Go Angelo. Yeah, Go Angelo. Go away, Angelo. But he's much more than that. And so they've been tweeting at Sean Hannity advertisers such as Keurig, you know, the coffee folks, and Eloquii, and I don't even know what they do. I think they're clothing or something like that. So much for my shopping, my shop to you drop, not so much. And, they've been tweeting at other outfits, Natural Products, and IHOP, and Nature's Bounty. And the tweets are all about the same. Let me read you one. Yeah, women's clothing company. Eloquii is a women's clothing company. Right. Right. Thank you for that. So here's Angelo Carusone tweeting on the 10th of November. Good afternoon, at Keurig. This is to the Keurig coffee people. You are currently sponsoring Sean Hannity's show. He defends child molester Roy Moore and attacks women who speak out against sexual harassment. Please reconsider. Here's Keurig coming back at him. For you folks who use Keurig, you might want to rethink this. Angelo, thank you for your concern and for bringing this to our attention. We worked with our media partner in Fox News to stop our ad from airing during the Sean Hannity show. And here's and Realtor.com was another one too. Yeah. And then Eloquii responded to Angelo's tweet. Hi there, Hannity is blocked from our advertising list. If we can help with anything else, please don't hesitate to reach out to us at social@illiqui.com. Oh, and here's Angelo going again at Ford. Good afternoon, at Ford. Cadillac and many other companies removed their ads from Hannity's show. By the way, that's not true. But Ford still sponsors him. He is now defending child molester Roy Moore and attacking women that speak out. Please reconsider. Ford didn't get back at him. Okay, Millennial Democrats. Remember that name. They tie right in with Angelo. I'll explain in a moment. And another also tied in person, Lee, L-E-I-G-H, at STW, I guess it would be S-Tweet Lee. She was after Mitsubishi to stop advertising on Sean Hannity. And Angela Kurson was also after Skoda Vest, you know, the vest that has all the pockets and stuff. Quote, your ads have run on Sean Hannity's program. Many companies have ceased sponsoring his show, especially in light of his recent defense of child molester Roy Moore. Please reconsider your ads. Anyway, here's the point. Angelo Curacone, you know, Go Angelo, at Go Angelo, is the president of Media Matters for America, folks. He's the most prominent figure behind this insane attack on sponsors of conservative hosts. I'm using Sean as an example because if you watch Sean's interview and subsequent shows concerning Roy Moore, he was anything but coddling to Roy Moore, and he was anything but deferential and respectful to the purported victims of both Roy Moore and others. I mean, this is all contrived crap, okay? They're using the Roy Moore thing as the Alabama election. The Alabama election could tip the balance on Obamacare repeal and on tax and all sorts of stuff. And they're also using it in a tangential attack against conservative media. And by the way, an untruthful tangential attack. And Media Matters, as a refresher course, is funded by billionaire, ultra-leftist, anti-American George Soros, who, by the way, has in the past tried to get some of these people off the air, including Sean Hannity. So all these innocent little tweets out there and the back and forth between seemingly high-minded and concerned Americans and these companies is anything but. It's more political crap. And it's one more reason that they have all this salacious sex fuzz going. And by the way, I got a number of emails from people asking what I think of the Roy Moore situation. So I'm going to tell you. Number one, and some of you may not like this. Let me tell you the facts of life. You know, the birds and the bees and the butterflies. So there's a whole bunch of women out there who are 40 or 50 or 60 who, by one way, shape, or form, manage to consort with or have as companions young men in their, I don't know if they're in their teens, but in their 20s and their 30s. And there's a whole bunch of older guys out there, you know, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, who knows what, who have young women in their 20s and their 30s as companions. And this is nothing new, although it's been more pronounced over the last 10 or 20 years. How many times have you seen an old fart of either gender and hanging on their arm is a young beauty or young stud of the opposite gender? I mean, can you even remember all the times they are so numerous? So I don't know if Roy Moore actually dated 18 and 19-year-olds. If you read the stories carefully, everybody was like 18, 19, early 20s that the press is jumping up and down about that have come forward after 40 years and with their stories, other than two, one who claims to have been 14 and one who claims to have been 16. And I bet you if you looked around right now, there are plenty of young men in their late 20s or early 30s who have girlfriends in their late teens or early 20s. And I would bet you, maybe not plenty, but I'll bet you there are a fair number of women in their early 30s who have boyfriends in their 20s. I mean, please. Police. And, you know, I'm not condoning anything that has to do with a man abusing a woman in any way, shape, or form. I personally despise men who hit women, are physically forceful with women. I have never in my life done that. It just disgusts me. But for all this salacious sex fuzz to be hurled around in a political context about 40-year-old events, which are, let's face it, they're pretty much impossible to prove and they're impossible to disprove. In the case of this one purported 16-year-old woman who says she was attacked by Roy Moore, and said that he signed the yearbook. Now there's legitimate questions over whether the signature in the yearbook was his or some type of stamp because the initials are of his court clerk. We also find out that she was actually in front of him when he was a judge with her divorce and never said a word. Didn't try and have him recused. Didn't have him kicked off the case. Come on. I mean, some things just don't add up. I'm sorry. And I'm not saying she's wrong, and I'm not saying she's right. I'm just saying instinct and intellect tells me something is not quite right. And it may not be quite right with Roy Moore's story, too, because his interviews with Sean Hannity left me feeling like, wow, what are you really saying here? I mean, what a weird thing to say when he said, well, not generally. Here's the bottom line. None of us know. And on a political basis, for Mitch McConnell and the Rhino establishment to try and get him literally to lose to the Democrat, which would swing the balance of power in a Senate that Mitch McConnell can't seem to control anyway, at the risk and peril of Trump's agenda, which is all about you and me, tax, repeal of Obamacare, infrastructure, you name it, seems to me to be another really weird thing. How do you explain that? Because the reality is this. Judge Roy Moore could get elected. Judge Roy Moore could go to the Senate. Judge Roy Moore could cast his votes just like we tried to do. And I forget the guy's name. I'll think about it in a moment. With Brown in the ACA fight in 2010, he could cast his votes, get these huge policies for the American people in America through, and then if Mitch McConnell and Roy Moore want to go fight, and you know Mitch McConnell wants to try and kick him out of the Senate or whatever, he could do so. Since you got a Republican governor in Alabama, whether or not after he casts his votes, Roy Moore being in the Senate or out of the Senate is irrelevant because the governor, if Roy Moore is kicked out of the Senate, is going to appoint a Republican replacement. There's only one way the Democrats can get this seat, and that is in this December 12th election. Period. And Mitch McConnell and the Republican establishment just doesn't seem to care. Not to mention the fact that we have also learned now that there's a $15 million slush fund. I'm not going to, or shush fund, I guess they're calling it, the shush fund. Of our tax money. Remember my story last week and this week about the $10,000 or whatever it was on this stupid real estate deal. Here's $15 million of our tax money being used to settle sexual harassment claims, which I'm quite sure are 90% correct by these poor women, by various congressmen and senators who have their names shielded from public view, who put these poor women through all sorts of ridiculous steps to bring their case, which in some cases I guess include like them getting lured over to a congressman's house or apartment and then the congressman doing, you know, nasty stuff. Wow. And Mitch McConnell is worried about whether Judge Roy Moore gets seated for a month to take two critical votes. I mean, that are key to the American. Do you folks follow, you men and you ladies? I'd love to have your feedback on this. Do you follow where I'm going with this? There's plenty of time to find out if the stuff about Judge Roy Moore is true or not. Right now, we don't know. And there's no way to find out, as far as I can see, between now and December 12th, the special election. So let's get the guy in the Senate, preserve Trump's agenda, which is to the benefit of us all. And if it turns out he did these nasty things, kick him the hell off the Senate, prosecute him, do whatever you got to do. And have the governor replace him with another Republican senator. Instead, the Republican establishment, and I'm sure that some of the names that are being hidden in this $15 million shush fund are Republicans. I would bet most are Democrats, but I bet you there's some Republican names in there. These goody-two-shoes, these sanctimonious deep staters, are willing to throw you and me under the bus to look good and once again to divert attention from their own salacious sex fuzz. It kind of pisses me off, if you haven't noticed. All right. Trump's Asian trip. We're moving right along here, kind of. Trump's Asian trip. Once again, the press downplayed it, and John Brennan, who is just a pathetic excuse of an American, the former head of the CIA, the political hack of Obama, the convert to Islam in Riyadh in 2009, one of the three, he, Comey, and Clapper, who spread around the fake Russian dossier that everybody now knows to be fake, paid for by Hillary Clinton and the DNC, derived from Russian fake stuff, you know, real Russian collusion, to influence the election, which it didn't. So this whole deal has been used to overshadow Trump's Asian trip, which, by the way, was a huge success. Never mind the fact that he is beginning to form an alliance of many unlikely players like Vietnam. I mean, listen, many of us are old enough to remember we're in, sacrificed, whatever, of our generation in Vietnam. And now Vietnam, put together, North and South, Vietnam may be our ally against both North Korea and against China in the South China Sea. That's kind of brilliant. Rather amazing, actually. And virtually nobody but some of the business channels talked about the fact he came back with $250 billion in Chinese deals for American companies, which means American workers and American jobs and American economy. And the press wanted to laugh at him when he characterized his discussion with Putin, concerning quote-unquote Russian meddling in the U.S. election. His quote was, listen to it to your, for yourself. I believe that he believes. That was his quote. I believe that he, Putin, believes XYZ. The press, of course, turned that all around to try and screw up his, not screw up his trip, but screw up the coverage of his trip, to say that he was saying that he believed Putin when Putin said he didn't meddle in the blah, 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 blah. Anyway, I think the Asian trip was a smashing success for Trump and a smashing success for America. And there's very few outlets you're going to hear that on, or all the, or these other little tidbits. That brings us to, since we talked about Russia and Putin, Uranium One. Now, I have done a number of shows on this. Go to the search bar. Listen to the last several shows, and that'll bring you really up to speed on the whole Uranium One treasonous corruption, which involves, like, all the top left or ultra-left progressives, globalists, deep staters in Washington. I mean, it is, it's like a spider web. And you know, the Democrats, I mean, they're a little bit panicked. You can kind of tell. They kind of sit there and stutter a little bit when they're asked questions. They take their time in answering. They try and direct it back to Trump whenever they can. And they like to say, I think Hillary said this week, well, she's investigated, it'll be an abuse of power, like a dictatorship. Oh, really, Hillary? Seriously? You mean because Comey and Lynch and Eric Holder and Barack aren't in there to protect you? Oh, and then they say it really, the Uranium One deal, given 20% of our uranium when we import uranium to Russia, that's really not a national security issue, you know. I mean, it's really not going to Iran or North Korea or whatever. It's just a corruption issue. And, you know, it's in the past and it doesn't matter because she lost the election. Well, okay. And then they like to say that nothing left the country. None of this uranium was supposed to leave the country. And then they point to the fact that 9 agencies had to approve this deal and it was unanimous. And then they point to a bunch of other things. Well, let me give you a little background to kind of tie it all in for you in one little segment rather than bits and drabs and pieces that you hear elsewhere. So that's the left's primary arguments against Uranium One being any big deal. Move along, nothing to see here. Number one, Mr. McCabe, the second in command at the FBI, we have talked about him. Just type in his name, you can listen. Whose wife ran for a political position and whose wife's campaign was given $700,000, give or take. I mean, a lot of money, particularly for a local political position, by the DNC and Clinton, working in tandem, because we have found out, remember last week, that Clinton controlled the DNC through a secret agreement. That's through Donna Brazile's book. It seems that a memo has now surfaced as finally Congress is prying all this stuff they tried to get for years out of the FBI. And the memo says that the Clinton investigation is going to be a very special investigation. And it's only going to be conducted by a very small group of top-level FBI guys. Gee, I guess that must be Comey and him. And, you know, nothing to see here. It's a matter, you know. It's not an investigation. It's a quote-unquote matter. Interesting. And then we have found out in the last week that now the FBI, right, McCabe, Rosenstein, who was the U.S. attorney assigned to the case, Mueller, etc., Comey, they actually had tapes. This is not testimony. We're talking about tapes and videos of Russian agents with suitcases full of cash talking about giving money to the Clinton Foundation to gain political favor to get the Uranium One deal done, but they allowed it to go through anyway. And we have also found out, and I believe I mentioned this in a previous show, that Bill Clinton himself, while this deal was coming down, you already know about him being paid $500,000, twice his normal speaking fee, by one of the banks who had a major financial stake in Uranium One, by giving a speech in Moscow. You also know, because I told you, that he met with Vladimir Putin while he was in Moscow during this deal. What nobody seems to have pointed out is that the appointees on this Foreign Investment Council that has to vote for these types of deals in the United States, all nine people on that council were Obama appointees, all nine. That included Eric Holder, Mueller and McCabe's boss, and that included Hillary Clinton, who was, although nobody's reporting it, particularly the mainstream media, the chairman of that council. You know, the same Hillary Clinton who's in the Hillary Clinton Foundation, who's in the Clinton Foundation, which is the same foundation that got $145 million from the board members of Uranium One and Rostocom, the Russian state nuclear energy company that bought the 20% in Uranium One that Hillary's outfit, who she was chairman of, approved, quote-unquote, 9-0. And we have also discovered, and I talked a little bit about this in the last show, that uranium has left the country. It went to Canada, then it went to Europe, and it probably went to Asia. And I would absolutely flat guarantee you, folks, some of it went to Iran, some of it went to North Korea. Understand that the more Russia can use Iran and North Korea as its proxies to keep us occupied, off balance, and at risk, the greater the latitude Russia has to do its mischief in other parts of the world. Russia is not our friend. And that Obama's Nuclear Regulatory Commission appointee paved the way to get that out of the country. And everything that the Democrats are telling you about how, oh, it never left the country, you know, it wasn't allowed to leave, is a big fat lie. Of course, that's what they do. Just so you know, and you can Google it up, Vlad Baby himself, that's Vladimir Putin, when this deal went down, actually gave a kind of a victory speech. And he personally okayed the allocation of the monies to buy the 20% interest from Rostocom, the Russian state nuclear company. And, of course, all this is being covered up how conveniently by, well, oh, yeah, that's right, the salacious sex fuzz. Huh. Man, that sex fuzz, it's like black paint on cardboard, isn't it? You can just cover up any corrugated surface you want with it. All right. To continue further, and this has to do with Clinton's scandals. It all ties into the Uranium One. But this has to do with the Russian dossier. Which, by the way, Brennan, to his further, if that's possible, discredit, on a Sunday show a week ago, talked about as not being disproven yet. Really, John? Really? Wow. And how he was concerned about Trump over in Asia. And I mean, make me puke. Gee, John, after your tenure at CIA and your boss's tenure, Obama, at president, after 8 years, the world is such a safer place. I mean, everything's hunky-dory. Iran has abandoned its nuclear program. North Korea doesn't have the bomb. China is not building military bases in the South China Sea. Russia doesn't have Ukraine. NATO isn't fracturing with Turkey possibly leaving. Everybody just loves us. Syria is all taken care of and everybody is alive, safe, well, and happy, and Assad is gone. There's no more terror. You guys did a great job, John. Terrific. Terrific. You and Barry and General Clapper. And James Comey. In any event, talking about the Russian dossier, we have learned, of course, that Clinton and the DNC paid for it, that it was totally manufactured, that their money, in fact, filtered through this Christopher Steele guy fusing GPS to Russian agents. How's that for Russian collusion? You're paying Russian agents for false information you know to be false, which you then use in a campaign to influence the American electorate. Wow. What does that sound like? Oh, okay, Hillary Clinton. So, Hillary also leaked the story that Trump had secretly agreed, because of this dossier, because they had it over him with this dossier, had agreed with the Russians that if he was elected, and you haven't heard this before, he would not interfere with the Russian takeover of Ukraine, and that he would end the oil sanctions against Putin. Seriously. I mean, that was kind of a byproduct of this. And to kind of substantiate that, they leaked this dossier out. You know, it went to all sorts of news outlets. In June 2016, way before the election, contrary to what Democrats say, Mother Jones, leftist rag, ran a story alleging the links. In August, Harry Reid, using the dossier, we all know how honest Harry Reid is, urged the FBI to investigate Trump. After the election, and right before the inauguration, to dampen the inauguration, BuzzFeed runs in January of this year, 2017, BuzzFeed runs the full text of the so-called dossier. And Comey pays for part of the dossier, and Comey, Clapper, and Brennan use the dossier along with Susan Rice, right, Obama's national security advisor, and Samantha Powers, who had no business doing any of this stuff, our United Nations ambassador, and Ben Rhodes, assistant national security advisor, to get hundreds, not one or two, hundreds of absolutely illegal and unconstitutional, because of the way they were obtained and because of the representations to the FISA courts, FISA warrants to eavesdrop and tap into Trump campaign, Trump transition, you name it. It doesn't get any scummier than this, folks. I mean, it really doesn't get any scummier. And if it doesn't make you worry about the sanctity of the Constitution, if these people are not brought to justice, I don't know what will. Fusion GPS delivered that dossier to the Clinton campaign, who had originally paid for it, in the summer of 2016. And I quote one of her staff members, quote, "She bragged about it so openly that many of the people in her Brooklyn campaign headquarters were aware of the existence of the dossier. Hillary referred to it as her secret weapon that would blow Trump out of the water." Hmm. It has also come to light in the last week or two, nobody's reporting this, that with her full knowledge, and the full knowledge of all her senior staff members on the campaign, that includes campaign manager Robbie Mook, communications director Jennifer Palmieri, press secretary Brian Phelan, and yes, campaign manager John Podesta, whose brother has been, well, we'll see. We'll talk about that in a moment, has been indicted. They leaked the dossier to the press and to members of Congress, which included one John McCain, Rhino. And it was John McCain who actually gave the dossier to James Comey, who then showed the dossier to Donald Trump, which created conversations between him and Donald Trump, a portion of which he illegally and treasonously leaked to a leftist Columbia professor friend who leaked to the New York Times, which resulted in the appointment of Robert Mueller, the head of the FBI at the time the Uranium One deal came down, who was in full possession of knowledge of the bribery, kickbacks, extortion that led to Uranium One and its effect on American uranium supplies, and nonetheless did nothing to stop it. Do you see how this all kind of ties in? All right. Now, this is really part of an even bigger story that I don't think anybody is talking about. Why suddenly are a number of Democrats beginning to throw Hillary Clinton under the bus for Uranium One, the Russian dossier, Fusion GPS, Russia, you name it? That's happening. Elizabeth Warren, Gillibrand from New York. I mean, a number of prominent Democrats. And at the same time, look at all the prominent Democrats and ultra-leftists beginning to throw Bill Clinton under the bus for being a pervert and for raping, molesting, harassing, etc. women, who are suddenly being given, after being thrown aside as trailer trash by the same left for more than two decades, are suddenly being elevated to the status of woman victim, which, by the way, they rightfully possess. Why is all this going on? Why suddenly is the Democratic Party, the Progressive Party, the ultra-left, at the highest levels, beginning to throw Hillary and Bill under the political bus? Why is that? That's what's happening on the surface. Let's look below the surface, because that's what I do. Who do you think the Democrats are going to run for president in 2020, folks? That's question number one. Question number two, what is the biggest political feud on a personal level in the quote-unquote Democratic Party today? And what has been that same rift, that same animosity, that same dislike for a number of years, in fact, maybe back to 2008. And now let me ask you a third question. Do you think there's anything that the ultra-left would not do to get back into the White House and to re-attain the reins of power in the House of Representatives, the Senate, and in states across the land? You think there's anything they wouldn't do? Well, let me answer those three questions for you. Number one, the biggest personal animosity in the Democratic Party, forget Bernie and Hillary, which is bad, and others, blah, 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 which is bad. And by the way, this ties into Donna Brazile's book, that which really throws Hillary under the bus. The biggest rift is between the Obamas and the Clintons. They really don't like each other. They haven't liked each other back to the primaries in 2008 when Barry Baby beat Crooked Hillary. Remember when Bill said, "What, they played the race card on me?" And the answer to the other question is, no, there is nothing the ultra-left would not do to get back into power, including eat their own. And I think, folks, particularly looking at who is throwing Bill and Hillary under the bus now? You know, Gillibrand in New York, she is the woman who took Hillary's Senate seat when Hillary was named Secretary of State by Obama in a purely political move. Gillibrand owes much to the Clintons, but she is closest to the Obamas. Donna Brazile gets along with the Clintons. She is closest to Michelle Obama. And I can go right down the list. And if you look at who the Democrats have to run in 2020, they don't want to run somebody old. Sorry, Joe Biden. They don't want to run somebody male. Sorry, Booker. Except maybe as a VP candidate. They'd really like to run a woman, and they'd really like to run a minority. And they'd really like to run somebody young, and they'd really like to run somebody with a name. And you know, the only person, and I said this 2 years ago, you back in my shows, I said, you mark my words. And back then I said there was a high likelihood. Now I would say there is a strong probability, or at least an overwhelming possibility, that this is all set up for Michelle Obama to run for president in 2020. Yes, I do believe so. All right. Now, next segment. Donald Trump and Robert Mueller. I alluded to this a little bit in my opening. I want you to sit back and I want you to, if you don't believe it, pretend. And if you do believe it, close your eyes and get yourself into the Trumpian mind meld, if you will. And let's assume that Donald Trump is really savvy, a hell of a street fighter, an unbelievable long-term strategist with an uncanny knack for knowing how to tip people over the edge, which obviously he has. Let's throw in another ingredient. You know, Trump touts often that he is fulfilling his campaign promises. And by the way, whether you like him or you don't, and whether you like the promises or you don't, whether you like his policies or you don't, you cannot admit, if you are an impartial observer of fact, that although he has not achieved them all, and he has had to temper some, he has done a remarkable job, maybe more so than any politician, never mind president, in the last 20, 30, 40 years, to have a list of promises and to check them off one by one by one. Some of them are still works in art, but they're all checked off. Not all, but many are checked off. The VA getting fixed. Trying to push through the tax bill. Trying to push Obamacare repeal. Dismantling regulations, Supreme Court. I mean, listen, I can go down the list. I'm not going to. Other outlets do that for you. But if you get yourself in the Trumpian mind meld here, I'm going to give you some facts. You can put them together the way you want. I'll tell you what they mean for me. Because the Democrats are all running around, but now rather apprehensively about, there's more indictments coming from Mueller, and, you know, Mueller's going to get Trump, and blah, 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 blah. You know, folks, the more I think about this, if I take the facts that Trump could fire Mueller but doesn't even talk about it, that Trump could get rid of Rosenstein, the second in command at the Justice Department, but doesn't. Trump could get rid of Sessions, but doesn't. Trump could do many things, but doesn't, when it comes to this whole kind of mishmash, Mueller, etc. Trump does not protest. In fact, he says he will not pardon Manafort, who got indicted, nor none of the other, the one or two folks who got Gates, I believe, Manafort's partner, and Papadopoulos, who did a plea deal with the FBI. He's not going to pardon any of them. And then you look at this fact. Number one, Robert Mueller met with Donald Trump on, we'll call it, day X. I don't know the exact dates here. I'm not going to take time to look him up. It doesn't matter. Much bigger picture. He met with Robert Mueller. The press said to interview Mueller to take Comey's job after Trump fired Comey. Gee, I hate to bring the facts of the law and the Constitution, the facts of the law and statute and regulation to the minds of the mainstream media because I know it's very inconvenient for them. But Robert Mueller had already served the maximum 10-year term allowed by law as an FBI director. So he sure as hell wasn't meeting with Trump to apply for the job of FBI director to replace his buddy Comey, who just got canned after being caught with his hands in the treason cookie jar. The day after Trump meets with Mueller, Rosenstein, who Trump had appointed, appoints Mueller as special counsel. To date, Mueller hasn't gotten within, 10 feet of Trump in Russia collusion. The indictments he's brought are about things that are 10 years ago have nothing to do with a campaign. In the meantime, all this stuff is coming out about Uranium One, the Russian dossier. I can go right down the list. And we find out, let me get the exact figures for you here. And we find out that there are something like 33 sealed indictments which have come down in D.C. Let me give you the exact numbers here. Yeah, there's 18 sealed indictments that have recently been filed in the United States District Court, District of Columbia, the D.C. District. And they're sealed. We don't know who they are yet. I believe one of them is probably Tony Podesta. But there's a reporter by the name of Liz Crokin who kind of follows all this kind of stuff. Let me quote. The proliferation of recently filed sealed indictments at the D.C. District Court indicates President Trump, through his appointed special prosecutor Robert Mueller, is going after the Podestas and Hillary Clinton. Quote. Trump made a shocking promise to Clinton in the event he got elected. If I win, I'm going to instruct my attorney general to get a special prosecutor to look into your situation. We're going to have a special prosecutor. Clinton responded, it's just awfully good that someone with the temperament of Donald Trump is not in charge of the law in our country. Trump interrupted and said, quote, because you'd be in jail, unquote. Now, folks, if you put all this together, Donald Trump knows his campaign promises, keeps his campaign promises, met with Mueller, who could no longer be the FBI director. The next day, Mueller is appointed by another Trump appointee, and you have a bunch of sealed indictments, and all this other stuff is coming out, which I would have to think was probably known to the incoming president of the United States and the pretty amazing inside staff he's put together. It hadn't been unearthed, but he knew it was there. I think that, how do I say this nicely? I think the ultra-leftists, the leftist Islamists, and crooked Hillary and her, and the whole cabal of all of them, are in for a rude surprise as to what's really going to happen with Mueller's special counsel. And I would not be surprised to see a second special counsel appointed over this Uranium One deal, which is over and above all this other Russia crap and Clinton Foundation corruption, which was known at the time Mueller was appointed. So, since Trump tries to keep his word as best he can, and he's making good on all his campaign promises, I would ask you, why wouldn't he make good on that one? Huh. I can't think of a reason. So, I'm going to bring you more on that probably next week and the next. But I think it's a pretty interesting thing for you to think about. Because I'm pretty sure I'm right. And unfortunately, not in this case, but unfortunately in many cases, I proved to be right. I wish in many of those cases I was not. Okay. By God, we're coming up on an hour and a half. I mean, I don't know if I'm going to get all this stuff in or not. All right, Las Vegas. So why has the Las Vegas shooting disappeared from the headline? It's like it never happened, right? I mean, obviously it did. And there's thousands, if you include family and friends and all sorts of things and significant others, there's tens of thousands of people that have been hugely, adversely, permanently, and irreparably affected. Not to mention the psyche of a nation. So why are we not hearing anything about this? Why is that? For instance, we haven't heard anything more about the 100,000 that we know Paddock wired to an account in the Philippines. We haven't heard anything more about his girlfriend, who originally was in Philippines, that took him days to get her back. We've never heard about her interview. They originally said that she had nothing to do with it, and all this stuff is on my show. Go back and read the articles. I'm posting them if they're at all credible. I can't vouch for every one of them. Impossible. But they're out there for you to read. And I try to use only articles that have additional sources named within the article. Go back for the last 6 weeks, beginning the show after the shooting, and that was a special 2.5-hour show. And read those articles and listen to those shows. Just type in Las Vegas or Las Vegas Massacre or Stephen Paddock, scumbag that he was, and you can listen to those shows. But 6 weeks later, folks, now 7 weeks almost, we don't know anything about the 100,000. We don't know anything about the girlfriend. We don't know anything about their switcheroo on the girlfriend. They didn't need her back, and then they needed her back, and then she didn't have anything to do with it. Now the sheriff slipped and said, well, she may know more than she's letting on, blah, 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 blah. What happened to the... We have heard nothing more about the missing hard drive in Paddock's computer. What did he do with it? Did he, like, take out the hard drive and eat it and then shoot himself in the head? Why? What would the sense have been of having a computer with him without a hard drive because he couldn't have done anything with it? I'm not even sure. I'm not a tech whiz. But if it doesn't have a hard drive in it, he couldn't even have watched the video cameras, which everybody agrees he set up in the hallway and on food trays and all sorts of stuff to warn him of approaching SWAT teams. I mean, what am I missing here? None of this makes sense. Okay, we've heard nothing more about the cruises that Paddock took with his girlfriend, by the way, that made port stops in the Mideast, or the pictures, actual pictures, they've been on the web, of him in the Mideast or him in the Mideast with his girlfriend. Then we learned like 2 weeks ago that there was some accidental shot by some police officer in the hotel room. I've talked a little bit about this. You know, guns don't go off accidentally, folks. Why would you have your gun drawn anyway if the suspect is already lying in a pool of blood with his head blown off? They say self-induced. And then, of course, we have, you know, where did all the shell casings go? And the front door that he fired 200 rounds through and wounded Campos, I don't see any 200 holes in that door. I don't know of any door that would withstand 200 holes and not fall apart. And then we have the security guard, Campos. Originally, he got wounded during the attack and that stopped the attack. And then he got shot 6 minutes before and then he got shot a minute before. And it was 72 minutes until cops arrived. And now we find out there were actually two cops outside Paddock's door somewhere between 3 and 6 minutes before he started shooting into the crowd. Really. And then Campos, who's kind of a material witness, they let him go to Mexico for a couple days. Then they don't allow him to be interviewed. Then we haven't seen a single even still picture, never mind a video, of Paddock, even though he was in that hotel for 5 days. And evidently had some other guest, some other woman with him. At one point his vehicle left, but he was still in the room. I mean, this whole thing just... Then we have the helicopter stuff. Last week, I gave you a hypothesis based on facts in the Mideast and other facts about the Saudi Arabian involvement or tangential relationship to this whole event. If you haven't listened to last week's show, you really should. And I can't tell you if I'm right or not, but man, it sure fits a lot of the pieces of this very perplexing puzzle together. I mean, there is a reason that the media has gone dark and the quote-unquote officials, including the FBI, has gone dark on this deal. There is a reason. Nothing happens without a reason. Now, let's go one step further, shall we? Oh, and by the way, and now there's been 8 survivors of that attack, all of whom stated emphatically there was more than one shooter, and they saw shell casings, like in front of the Tropicana, which, if you remember from last week's show, is where the heir apparent to the Saudi Arabian throne was staying. Wow. I mean, really? Way too much unexplained stuff here. Way too much disjointed stuff that can only be explained by certain types of glue, none of which are very pretty. Let's assume that my hypothesis last week, in a nutshell, that this was a mass diversion by more than one shooter, and Paddock was a patsy and an arms runner, which is where he really got his money. This was all diversion by the radical Islamist side of King Faisal's Saudi Arabian ruling family to dispose of the more moderate heir to the throne, Faisal's brother, Salman, who was staying at the Tropicana, and that the helicopters that everybody is talking about that they saw on the heavily armed men that people at the airport saw go into helicopters, and the fact that the helicopters turned off their transponders and all this stuff were really rescue helicopters to get Salman out of an assassination attempt at the Tropicana that was being masked by the mayhem at the Mandalay Bay. Out of a spy novel, you bet, but plausible, you bet. And then, of course, there would have to be a reason for the silence. Now, I think you'll agree that the silence probably emanates from America's deep state. There's a reason for the silence. We know that over the last 2 weeks, the government of Saudi Arabia, led by Faisal and the heir apparent, his brother Salman, have had a shock and awe political crackdown. 5 dozen members of the royal family, ministers, prominent businessmen have been arrested. 800 billion of their assets have been, this is facts now, this is not surmise, have been seized by the Saudi Arabian government. Several have been killed and several members of the family have been killed in shootouts with security forces. Trump has been uncharacteristically quiet about an outfit that he pretty much kind of slapped around a little bit during the campaign. And yes, you could attribute that to the fact he needs them to fight Iran. I think all that is true. But there's something else going on, too. And, you know, It comes back to the petrodollar, folks. I was thinking about this. And there happened to be an article this week that jogged my mind on top of it. And it comes from Nick Gambriano, who's an editor for Bill Bonner, who's a pretty deep kind of forward thinker. I don't always agree with what he says, but, you know, he can put two and two together. So, bear with me. In 1944, there was a conference, the Bretton Woods Conference. It was really the point at which America took over as the preeminent economic, military, geopolitical power in the world. And everything was based on the U.S. dollar, and the U.S. dollar was backed by gold. Then as inflation took off, the dollar weakened, and other countries decided that they could, you know, that they that there were more dollars than there were gold backing it. Nixon and Henry Kissinger took America, quote-unquote, temporarily, off the gold standard in 1971. And they went to Saudi Arabia. This is all fact now. And they went to Saudi Arabia, and basically what they did with Saudi Arabia was, and the reason they picked Saudi Arabia is because Saudi Arabia was the head of OPEC. It had vast petroleum reserves. And the Saudi royal family was, and always has been, pretty easily corruptible. And they made a deal prior to taking America, the American dollar, off the gold standard. They made a deal to kind of back the American dollar with the next best thing to gold, which is oil. It was called the petrodollar. So they made a deal that the House of Saud, which is Faisal and Salman and all those guys, the House of Saud would survive because America would protect them. And in exchange, Saudi Arabia would use its dominant position in OPEC to ensure that all oil transactions with OPEC could happen only in United States dollars, the petrodollar, and would secondarily recycle the billions of United States dollars from its oil revenues to American weapons manufacturers and infrastructure companies, and would buy and hold U.S. treasuries. Which, of course, lets the United States issue more debt, print more money, and finance absolutely outrageous budget deficits, including for social programs which buy votes and keep the powerful in power, i.e. the deep state. By 1970, that was in 1971, by the way, 1971. By 1977, 20% of all treasuries held abroad were in Saudi hands. And if you remember, this is follows the big oil embargo and crisis of the early 70s, which has never, after that, happened again. I mean, this all ties in rather neatly, doesn't it? And to give you an idea of the power of oil, global commodity sales in 2016, oil, $1.7 trillion, gold, $200 billion, iron, $180 billion, copper, about $160 billion, aluminum, about $160 billion, zinc, about $100 billion, lead, less than that, nickel, less than that, and silver, about $20 billion. Do you see the power of oil? And do you see the power of a currency more or less backed by oil rather than gold? I'm sure you do. So, the petrodollar, folks, became the ultimate enabler of big government, i.e. the deep state and the growth of the deep state. It became the bedrock of the entire U.S. financial system. It is one of the it allowed, because you can only buy, because you must have oil, you must have energy. I don't care what country you are or what household you are in what country you are. You must have energy. And you could only buy that energy in dollars because of the 71 agreements. Follow me on this. That also gives the United States a huge political and economic weapon in the form of sanctions, which have been applied to China in some ways, to Russia in other ways. And is one of the things, you can listen to my shows, just type in United States dollar, and I think the shows will come up, or Russia or China. One of the reasons that Russia and China are trying to establish alternate world reserve currencies. It's one of the reasons Russia and China have been huge buyers of gold to back these new currencies. It's one of the reasons that they are cooperating on energy and other projects which will be paid for in Chinese yuan rather than U.S. petrodollars. I mean, it's a really big, complicated picture, but I think you get the general gist here. And I'm going to talk more about this in the coming weeks because it's very, very, very important. But suffice it to let me tie it into Las Vegas. If what I'm saying is true, that the American deep state and the political power of the elite are contingent upon the continuation of the petrodollar, because it allows deficits and spending for welfare and, you know, creating money out of thin air and the whole nine yards. And if, in fact, Saudi Arabia is still playing its side of the bargain in return for the continuing survival of the royal ruling family, the Sauds, then suddenly helicopters, off-grid helicopters, armed men, diversions, plucking Saudi princes and heir apparents off the roofs of the Tropicana, and the mere event of, you know, 60 dead Americans and 500 wounded women, children, and men, and thousands of families disrupted. I mean, that's kind of minor, isn't it? To continue that whole petrodollar, deep state support and Saudi collusion. What do you think? Something to think about. Once again, I'm going to go into more of that in future shows. I just kind of wanted to give you a little feel for today. And today, I might add, I am once again way, way over time. My God, where does it go? So I'm going to just tell you, and I'm going to talk about more next week, because once again, there's much more under the surface. There's always a reason. There's always an agenda. There's always something under the surface of the news you hear, you know, skimming the tops of the waves. It's the depths of the sea that we want to plumb. So you have you haven't heard almost anything about this, right? Because we've been listening to our salacious sex fuzz. We've been distracted. So there's like this bubonic plague which has erupted in Africa. Erupted. 200 to 300 dead already, thousands infected, most of them, I guess, fatally. Supposedly, there's some virulent strains of this bubonic plague which are not curable, which can kill you in 3 hours from contracting the disease or getting the bacteria or virus or whatever it is. I'm not a medical guy. Nobody's talking about it. The World Health Organization, you can Google this up, and a number of scientists and immunologists are deathly afraid it could become a regional or pandemic, that is global, a regional or global pandemic. And it all is kind of suspicious. It reminds me of the Ebola thing. Do you remember that back in like 2014? And you start thinking about who might benefit from something that if this was a manufactured disease. Let me read you something that Prince William. He was calling for urgent depopulation efforts a few months ago. Quote, Africa's rapidly growing human population is predicted to more than double by 2050. A staggering increase of 3.5 million people per month, unquote, Prince William explained during a recent event hosted by the Tusk Trust, a charity that is committed to protecting African wildlife. According to the Telegraph, this is the British, UK Daily Mail, by the way, folks. According to the Telegraph, Prince William continued, quote, urbanization, infrastructure development, cultivation, all good things in themselves, but they will have a terrible impact unless we begin to plan and take measures now, unquote. Do you remember when we had that Ebola outbreak and nobody could understand why Barack Obama rushed 3,000 American troops to the Ebola place, and then suddenly they had this magic immunization, and the Ebola thing went away, and it was a miracle about how fast they developed the vaccine, and blah, 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 blah. Well, if you know anything about vaccines, and I'm no expert, but I will tell you that if you want to study them, they take years to develop. Years. They're not developed in weeks or months, unless they're already on the shelf. And of course, any kind of disease that comes along, to prevent that disease from coming along in the future, you have to have vaccines and all sorts of stuff, and antidotes. And you know, the big winners in that are pharmaceutical companies and their backers. And the winners, of course, in diseases which, you know, could or do kill off big swaths of population are those who believe in depopulation. You know, humans are bad and climate change is a deal and blah, blah, blah. I'm going to leave that thought with you because I'm out of time. I'm going to get excommunicated by AM stations. I'm out of time, but I want to leave that thought with you because we're going to revisit this next week. And next week, I promise that I will start the show off with AMAC versus AARP because it's stuff you need to know and very interesting, particularly for those of you who are probably 40 and above, certainly for those of you who are 50 and above. Of course, I'm 21. I'm just bringing it to you as a public service. Oh, yeah. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. I hope I've given you some thoughts to chew on. You have a safe week, and we'll talk to you next week.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive, and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.